Shel Anderson's a naturalist and plant ecologist. She joins us periodically to talk about phenology or what's going on in the woods right now. Welcome back, Shel.
Hi.
Well, most winters, red poles abound at feeders, and we have two species here. Tell us what they are and how they're faring this winter.
Okay. Yeah, red poles are definitely very common this winter, at least in my little bit of world that I get to look at regularly. They're a circumboreal species, so have a huge range globally. Very successful northern boreal Arctic breeding bird. So we're not going to see them here in the summertime. They're a winter visitor, and they sometimes have, like a lot of these winter finches we've talked about before, have these eruptions, but they're difficult to predict. And as you say, we almost always have some, but some years we have way more. And sometimes they go much further south in large numbers than they do generally. So they travel in big flocks, typically up to several hundred birds. I've never seen a flock that big here in the wintertime, but I've seen them coming back in the spring, you know, heading north. So birds that apparently that in that year had gone further south even than here and were migrating back, very large flock, yeah, easily, you know, 300-400 birds traveling together. So they're very gregarious. They hang together. They're, you know, small finches, so 4-5 inches, and very stripy, brown and white stripy birds overall, but with a nice red patch on their foreheads and what is kind of a black chin because of some black feathers around their little pointed yellow bills. And then they have, I kind of think of it as the males are wearing a red vest, kind of a pale red vest. So their chest and kind of upper flanks have this pale red wash on them. And their tail is kind of short and notched. And their heads, to me, look disproportionately small for their, for their bodies. And I'm not sure if that's just with their winter plumage, the rest of their bodies look big. I don't know, but they look like they have kind of small heads overall to me. They're seed eaters. They rely, other than during the breeding season for feeding their young and that sort of thing, they're going to rely predominantly on seeds. Birch seeds are hugely important to their diet year-round, whenever they can be found anyway. But alders, willows, of course, here we wouldn't have much for willows in the winter, but in the north, where they are breeding, there'd be a lot of willow seeds throughout the summer, and pine and spruce seeds, so little seeds generally. So at feeders, they are going to like the typical black oil sunflower seeds, but also the Niger seed. They're big enjoyers of Niger seed.
We have two species?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we also have the hoary red pole.
Yeah, what is that?
Well, it's going to be very similar. It's a much less common red pole. It's a paler overall, a little bit, I don't know, maybe a little bit larger, but nothing I could distinct. Well, they're sitting side by side or something. A little paler overall, especially on the rump. They both have this wonderful adaptation of a kind of a stretchy place patch on their esophagus, on their throats, that can serve as a pouch where they can stash seeds. So if you think about where they live in the tundra, mostly, of course, this is treeless, a lot of it, very little shelter. And so it's a great advantage to be able to go out where there may be some seeds in an exposed area, you know, some stunted birches or willows or something, and feed a lot, gather a bunch of seeds and being able to stash them in this pouch and then go to a more sheltered place to actually eat them because you're not being exposed to the wind and the cold as severely as if you're just trying to do the whole job where you are. So they can apparently stash up to, I think, about 42% of what they need in terms of food for the day in that pouch. So if you think of most of their seeds, other than what we would feed them at a bird feeder, are very tiny seeds compared to a sunflower seed, for instance, even the actual seed of a sunflower. And so, you know, many, many of these little seeds can be packed into that pouch and consumed at a later time. They're really interesting birds behaviorally, too, both the common and hoary red poles. Because they travel around in these flocks, and that's the way they live, they have developed some really interesting interesting behaviors, social behaviors. And here, when they're here in the winter, we have this great opportunity to compare how they, as kind of a flock living bird, manage their interactions compared to chickadees. You know, anyone who's paid much attention to their chickadees know that it's more hierarchical. Birds kind of take their turns at the feeder. It's kind of one at a time. They're never all there en masse. Totally different with the redpolls. They're all, you know, there en masse. And they have calls, a lot of calling in between to kind of signal between them, whether it's confrontational calling or, hey, let's go to the next place. They all end up zooming off, swirling off together. They kind of maintain like all the social finches. If they're all in a group, you see them constantly kind of adjusting the space between each other, you know, just maintaining. So they have this, we talk about personal space, you know, and how in human culture, some cultures are much more in your face and close than others. Well, that's what I see, you know, when I watch the finches do. They're just maintaining that, what is the appropriate personal space in that feeding, foraging mode. And when a bird gets too close, another redpole gets too close, you'll see the other one or another one kind of confront it face to face and open its mouth and kind of jut that black chin out and really fluff out its feathers, you know, and it's a signal. We are getting too close. Move away. Keep your distance. You're supposed to stay within, you know, or keep within beyond a certain distance. So I think it's fun to watch the differences in how birds that work together, for the most part, how they manage to do that, you know, in their the way they interact with each other, because it's not uniformly the same. They each different types of birds have worked out different ways of making it work for them, and clearly redpolls have been very successful with all of these behaviors because they're really common. Many, many millions of redpolls in the world. And it's also worth mentioning that they are among the birds that can survive the coldest temperatures, minus 65. That's a lot colder than it gets here.
Let's hope.
Yeah.
Jill Anderson regularly updates us with the goings on in our woods and waters. Thanks for bringing us up to date on redpolls.
Sure.